From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu.
At the legislature today, senators are still debating Common Core education standards in a bill that will be put to a vote over the weekend. That while delegates begin their review of a broadband expansion bill in committee. And the week was full of budget news. We recap the latest coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. Governor Jim Justice has amended his budget proposal for the 2018 fiscal year and as a result is restoring funding to some previously cut state programs. The changes to the plan were presented to House Speaker Tim Armstead and Senate President Mitch Carmichael in a letter yesterday. Justice's initial budget was based on $450 million in tax increases, which are still the base of the amended plan. But with some changes, Justice says his budget would result in a $54 million surplus for the 2018 fiscal year. His changes include smoothing the cost of payments to the teachers' retirement system over 3 years, saving the state $40 million this year. It includes a budget transfer from the Office of Minors Health Safety and Training to the Division of Forestry to recall 15 laid-off foresters and restoring nearly $4.5 million in funding for West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Senate Finance Chair Mike Hall says the mid-session budget adjustments are typical from the governor.
He hasn't changed how much money we're going to collect. He's changed the spending plan, which happens every year, by the way, because halfway through the sessions, usually you get new numbers on local share property taxes. In this case, we got a new number on the pension smoothing plan that's being called, which is about $43 million less that we'll have to account for in the budget. And there were some other things changed here and there. There are little things here and there that adjust, that certain lines are adjusted. We anticipated every year and we just got it a day or two ago.
Some of the suggestions, Hall says, like the changes to the teachers' retirement payments and the funding for public broadcasting, will be immediately included in the Senate version of the budget. No word yet on how the governor's amended proposal will change the House budget. In the House today, delegates passed 11 bills, including one that adds two exemptions to the state's above-ground storage tank law that was approved in 2014. House Bill 2811 exempts certain tanks that hold oil and brine water from having to be registered with the State Department of Environmental Protection. The bill was approved almost unanimously today. Earlier in the morning, the House Judiciary Committee took its first look at a bill to expand broadband internet access in the state. Liz McCormick reports the bill's goal is for all West Virginians to have access by 2020.
According to the Federal Communications Commission, 30% of West Virginians do not have access to basic broadband services, as defined by federal law. When you look at just the rural parts of the state, that percentage increases to 48. House Bill 3093, which was taken up in the chamber's Judiciary Committee this morning, seeks to expand access to underserved areas in the state. The bill itself is 33 pages long. It allows communities to form internet co-ops, which lead sponsor of the bill, Delegate Roger Hanshaw, explains, are groups of citizens who live in certain geographic areas. The groups can work together to become their own internet service provider.
If a provider isn't coming into their area with service that's of high enough quality to suit their needs, they can get together to work with the provider and become their own provider there in that small community.
Hanshaw, who is from rural Clay County, says this was one of the biggest barriers he and his colleagues found as they began working on this bill a year ago. Hanshaw says the bill also addresses some smaller barriers too, like dealing with micro trenching, which is the official term for a simple process, the laying of pipes with internet fibers inside them alongside any new highway construction in the state. Hanshaw says the bill is comprehensive, but with a straightforward approach.
It's just simply meant to remove barriers to service. So our objective in adopting this bill, if we ultimately get it passed both houses, is to just remove several barriers all at once to expansion of service, and by doing so, hopefully remove that great big barrier.
Henshaw says the bill wouldn't use any state dollars, and it gives communities the authority to get it started.
There's nothing compulsory about this bill. This is all a permissive bill. It lets people do things. That's the objective. So this is a revenue neutral bill. This bill doesn't require any expenditure of state funds. So how quickly the bill causes service to expand is largely going to be driven by how quickly people want it to happen.
The bill also creates a broadband enhancement council, which is made up of 13 voting members, including the Secretary of Commerce and the State Superintendent of Schools. The council is housed in the Department of Commerce and is tasked with providing administrative, personnel, and technical support services to the communities that seek broadband expansion on their own. The bill also establishes a broadband enhancement fund, which will hold any donations or appropriations the council receives for their projects. Henshaw says this bill is an important frontier for West Virginia.
The interstate highway system, when it was built after President Eisenhower's term, opened up the country to an entirely new form of commerce. The broadband, access to adequate broadband service is this generation's equivalent to the interstate highway system.
After an hour of questions and discussion in committee this morning, House Judiciary passed House Bill 3093 without debate. It now heads to the full chamber and will likely see a vote next week. For the legislature today, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
Delegate Roger Hanshaw's broadband proposal was the subject of a public hearing this morning in the House chamber, sponsored by the House Judiciary Committee. Here's a look at some of the discussion about House Bill 3093 from this morning.
And just like a water project, it's absolutely fundamental to the future of West Virginia, particularly those smaller, rural, underserved areas, to be able to have broadband and allow them to prosper and thrive going forward. Certainly, communities across West Virginia, particularly those smaller communities, have faced unprecedented sort of challenges to keep their economic vitality. If you don't have broadband, I promise you they won't be successful. You absolutely have to have that.
I'm here to tell you a positive story about broadband as opposed to some of the others you might hear today. Our members really started the broadband industry in West Virginia about 2000. We've invested approximately $2.5 billion in the last 16 or 17 years, and incrementally, it seems to be averaging about $200 million in annual investment on top of our original investment. As a result, about 70% of the state has access to 25 meg or higher broadband, according to last year's FCC report. And while that places us at a lower rank nationally, I would remind you that only about half of this state has water and sewer services from public sources. So I don't think we've done too bad in the last 16 years compared with 153 years of West Virginia and our ability to bring water and sewer to folks' homes.
And if I heard correctly, we only have two representatives here, two organizations that are here in the opposition to the bill. Those are our incumbents, the incumbent phone company and the incumbent cable companies. And there's a reason that they're opposed to, because this bill is going to enable competition. And that's a good thing for West Virginia.
The advertising piece of the bill, of course, is something that we have a concern for. Frontier Communications ceased using the words up to in its advertising in 2014. All providers have the same issue with providing service in terms of guaranteeing speed and using the maximum speed. And if providers aren't allowed to promote the service that is available, I think that will be detrimental to the state's economic development, because how can we promote West Virginia from an economic development perspective if people don't know what broadband internet availability is for them?
Senators are still debating a bill that explicitly repeals Common Core in West Virginia, even though the standards are no longer being taught in West Virginia schools. The bill would also have required the West Virginia Board of Education to adopt education standards that are some 20 years old. But that portion of the bill was amended on the floor today. Senate Bill 524 would repeal Common Core in West Virginia and replace the state's current English standards with those used in the state of Massachusetts in 2001 and math standards with those used in California in 1997. Yesterday on the Senate floor, Education Committee Chair Kenny Mann explained that Common Core is already dead in West Virginia and lawmakers didn't need to vote on a repeal. In 2015, the West Virginia Board of Education voted to repeal Common Core and went through a year-long study and review process, resulting in the creation of the West Virginia College and Career Ready standards that are taught in schools today. During today's Senate session, Senator Robert Carnes moved to amend the bill, making several changes. They include requiring the State Board of Education to allow West Virginia teachers to be part of the standards review process. Carnes says that portion of the bill may be redundant. Teachers are already included in that process, but it guarantees that will continue. Carnes explained to Senate Minority Leader Roman Prezioso that there are other changes included in his amendment.
Prior to this amendment, this particular bill required that we use particular standards from Massachusetts and California. And so instead of calling out some alternative standard, this is simply reinforcing the idea that West Virginia standards are going to be developed by West Virginia educators, or at least with their participation.
His amendment also requires a new cyclical review of the standards.
And what I hear from teachers is that they're tired of every few years an entirely new standard being adopted. It would seem to me like it would be much more useful. And again, this is in consultation with the state board that such standards as we use are reviewed on a regular basis. They may need only minor tweaks as opposed to complete rebuilds. So I think the idea is to allow the standards to grow and evolve as opposed to every few years coming up with an entirely new standard and imposing that down on the boards of education at the county level, the principals, the teachers, and so on.
Prezioso says the amendment adds further confusion to the standards review process, but Carnes says the language in his amendment was reviewed by the State Department of Education before it was proposed, and he believes they are already in compliance with it. Carnes defended the amendment.
What this does, it allows this bill to clarify that Common Core is dead in West Virginia, and it specifically, with the language it's left behind, makes it clear that we're going to pull out of the memorandum of understanding that requires the state of West Virginia to have an 85% match with the Common Core standards. So I think an argument can be made.
So I understand Common Core is dead. I mean, I heard the education chair yesterday very explicitly say that the Common Core standards are dead, that we are now adopting West Virginia standards.
And again,
did he misrepresent or did I misunderstand what he said?
I can't speak for the chairman, and he's not here to speak for himself, it looks like, briefly. But, again, we haven't withdrawn, as I'm aware, from the memorandum of understanding. So, technically, we're supposed to still be in compliance with Common Core, even if we have, quote, killed Common Core. So this would make it clear that we're going to withdraw from that memorandum of understanding and that we will no longer be part of the consortium.
Ultimately, the senator's amendment was approved, and the bill will be on third reading in the chamber tomorrow when it will be put to a final vote. We take a look now at some of the House and Senate districts from the central part of the state in this edition of Meet Your Lawmakers.
Greg Bosso was appointed to the West Virginia Senate in 2015 and was elected to the position in 2016. Bosso is a Republican from Nicholas County. He represents the 11th Senatorial District. Senator Bosso serves as chair of the Senate Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure and vice chair of the Committee on Natural Resources. Andrew Robinson is a first-term delegate from Kanawha County. A Democrat, he was elected to represent the state's 36th House District. Robinson is a graduate of West Virginia University and a real estate agent. He is a former member of the West Virginia Property Valuation Training and Procedures Commission. Larry Rowe is a Democrat from Kanawha County. He represents the House's 36th District and was elected in 2014. Rowe previously served as a member of the House from 1996 until 2000. Then he was elected to the state Senate, serving one term from 2000 to 2004. Brad White was elected to the House of Delegates in 2014. A Republican, he represents the 36th House of Delegates District and is from Kanawha County. White works in the insurance industry and serves as the vice chairman of the House Committee on Banking and Insurance.
The governor's budget adjustments released today were just one item on the list of major budgetary news this week. Joining me to recap the fiscal news of the week are Garrett Ballingy, the executive director for the Cardinal Institute for West Virginia Policy, and Sean O'Leary. He's the senior policy analyst at the West Virginia Center on Budget and Policy. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being here this evening.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with the Republican budget framework that was released on Monday. There were some examples of places that the Republican leadership is looking to cut, not a whole lot of specifics just yet, but they pointed to $50 million from public education, $50 million from higher education, and $50 million from Medicaid that I just want to remind everyone is matched almost 3-1 in West Virginia. So Garrett, why don't we start with you? These three areas that Republican lawmakers are looking to cut, do you think that's a good idea?
I don't know. I think that's tough to say, but I think everyone knows right now that the state is in a very difficult fiscal situation, and the general principle, it's my understanding of the framework, is the state needs to live within its means. And I think that's a principle that we can all understand, whether that be a household, a business, or a state government. To be clear, the state government is not a business or a household. But anytime that you try to increase taxes or raise revenue enhancements or anything like that, you increase the risk that your state is less competitive vis-a-vis other states. It's the principle of American federalism. So I would just say before we start raising taxes to fill some of these, we need to take that in consideration.
Well, and then we should point out, you know, the governor's budget tries to increase taxes by $450 million. Republican lawmakers have said we are not interested in do that, so we're going to find interested in doing that, so we're going to find some cuts instead. So, Sean, but these specific areas, you know, do you think those are good places to go into?
Well, the problem with this budget is that it ignores what West Virginia's issues are in the state. The best evidence we have for why West Virginia is lagging behind, why we're so poor, is that we have an undereducated and unhealthy workforce. We have a aging infrastructure. We have not enough students going to college. So when you look at where the budget is attacking, it's attacking the things that we need to be investing in, not the things we need to be cutting back on. We need to be making sure our colleges are affordable. We need to be making sure our schools are top-notch. We need to be making sure our infrastructure is the best that we can offer. That's what will attract business to the state. That's what will make our state thrive and our state grow. The past 5-10 years, we've seen the state doing the exact opposite. We've cut taxes by $500 million a year. We've cut the budget by $600 million. We've seen every area of the budget smaller than it was 5 years ago, particularly higher education. That's really been hammered. $55 million cut from the budget over the past 5 years, and then add another $50 million on top of that, and it's hard to see why any person would want to make West Virginia their place to work, their place to raise a family, when we're not building the infrastructure, the services, the public good that creates the foundation for prosperity.
Now, there are some other places in the budget that they found to cut, reducing the governor's SOS fund, this $105 million line item he was looking for to try to bring business investment into the state. The governor's teacher pay raise goes away. The subsidies to Greyhound and casinos, that goes away. And there's the continuance of Tomlin's 2% mid-year cuts, which came, I think, in November or December of last year. Garrett, of any of these things, do you have feelings, thoughts, disagreements, agree? Should we get rid of this SOS fund? Should we keep Greyhound and casino subsidies? What are your thoughts there?
Well, I think the record of these sort of economic development funds, which is what I would consider the Save Our State thing to be across the states, is fairly dubious. So I think that's a risky thing for us to be spending money on in this, given our fiscal crisis. I would also say things like subsidies and tax credits to Greyhounds and casinos and things like that, I also think from an economic perspective are very dubious things for us to be spending our money on. So I'm completely behind those sorts of ideas, again, because I think the likelihood that they take our state from worst to first is extremely low, and I'm not sure that's something we should be asking our taxpayers to help finance.
Sean, I'm going to kind of assume you agree there.
Yeah, I mean, what you're seeing here is the legislature really kind of scrambling around the budget to make these cuts. So we're getting rid of subsidies, we're getting rid of the Save Our State Fund, and we're still looking at $150 million in cuts to higher education, to public health, to our K-12 education. So, you know, at what point are we going to actually, you know, face the reality that if we want to improve our state, we need to invest in our state, and those investments, like it or not, are going to take substantial revenue, and we can do that in a way that doesn't hurt the state, that doesn't hurt the working class people in the state. But continued cuts to higher ed, continued cuts to K-12, you know, not paying our teachers an adequate salary, those are all things that are going to do long-term damage to the state.
Now, we saw the governor adjust his budget today, but his original budget that came during the State of the State address, $497 million hole that needed to be filled, and he said we should do $450 million of that in new taxes. The Republican leadership this week was very strongly saying, we're not going to increase the size of the state budget. We're going to hold the line and keep it to the revenue estimate that comes from the governor's office at just over $4 billion. Do either of you want to take on the difference between a revenue estimate and actual tax collections? What's the difference there? Can you explain it?
Yeah, I mean, they take an economic model, they contract some of this work out, and they look at economic growth, income growth, the coal and natural gas industries, and they do their best way to project out that revenue for the next fiscal year, because we budget ahead of time. We're currently in, you know, we're debating the fiscal year 18 budget. And then the actual revenue collections, depending on sometimes a lot of factors outside of the state control, like just this past year when natural gas prices collapsed, that has a big impact on your actual revenue collections. Your actual revenue collections and your revenue estimates, there can be a gap. And one of the things that creates conflict in our state is that that's done by the governor. A lot of states' legislatures has the capacity to create their own revenue estimates. That's not the case in West Virginia, so that can be a little push and pull between the executive and the legislative branches in West Virginia.
Garrett, is it risky to build a budget off of estimates?
It is. I'm not sure necessarily what the alternative is. Mm-hmm. Sort of echoing Sean, a lot of states have the ability from a legislative standpoint to offer up their own forecasting models. I think that's something that would be nice to see. What exactly are the inputs they're using? What kind of forecast are they making? And then we can all get a good idea of what exactly they're basing those numbers off of. That way we can avoid these types of crises in the future.
So we just have a few minutes left, and I want to get to these quickly. The tax reform bill was passed out of the Senate Select Committee on Tax Reform earlier this week. Basically, we're trying to cut the state's personal income tax to 2.5% for everybody. Everybody pays the same rate. And we're replacing that income with an 8% general consumption tax. And then there are some triggers to hopefully get rid of the personal income tax down the road. I'm going to ask both of you very quickly to just touch on a general plan. Is getting rid of the personal income tax and replacing it with a larger consumption tax a good idea? Garrett, you want to start?
I think generally speaking, it's a good idea. I think we need to recognize there are only two inputs to economic growth, capital and labor. And I think it behooves us as a state to look, how do we minimize any disincentives to creating income through labor? How do we minimize any distortions to capital accumulation? Well, then you want to incentivize people to save. And I think transitioning from a mostly income-based taxation system to one of consumption, which again incentivizes savings, again, understanding that capital and labor are the main inputs to economic growth. And I think that's probably a very good thing. But I think it is disruptive. And so I think the idea of a phase-in over a number of years is a very smart way to go about this if we are going to go about it.
Sean, we just got about 20 seconds left. But overall, do you think this is a good plan for West Virginia?
Not for West Virginia. I mean, you take a look at this proposal, and it would be probably one of the biggest redistributions of wealth in the state. 80% of West Virginians will be seeing a tax increase, while the wealthiest in the state will be getting a major, major tax cut. That's not good for West Virginia. That's less money in the economy, less spending, less demand for goods. Smaller businesses would probably be paying more taxes under this plan. And the idea that the consumption tax is better than an income tax is more based in ideology than it is in any evidence. We can look across the country at states that have moved in this direction. They're not doing so well. Kansas, Ohio, Wisconsin, they're all lagging behind the country as a whole when it comes to economic growth. And this tax reform hasn't worked for them.
Sean O'Leary and Garrett Ballingy, thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you.
We return now to the State House, where we meet three more members of the 83rd West Virginia Legislature.
Robert Carnes is a Republican from Upshur County. He was elected to represent the Senate's 11th district in 2014. Carnes serves as the vice chair of the Senate Committee on Education. Mike Pushkin represents the 37th House of Delegates district. Delegate Pushkin was elected in 2014 and is a graduate of West Virginia University. He is known in his community for being an accomplished folk musician. Nancy Foster is a first-term delegate from Putnam County. She was elected in 2016 to represent the 38th House District. Foster makes up one half of the House's only mother-son team. Her stepson, Jeff Foster, is also a member of the chamber.
Next week on the program, we focus in on Governor Jim Justice's proposal to raise more than $1 billion in new revenue for infrastructure through a road bond initiative. Newly appointed Secretary of the Department of Transportation Tom Smith joins us to discuss the proposal and explain the 48,000 jobs the governor says the bond would create. For now, this has been The Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. We'll see you back here next week.
Support for The Legislature Today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.